Two nights ago, we watched the Carolina Hurricanes beat the Washington Capitals in overtime, sorry, a shootout. Carolina should have scored 5 goals, but it didn't matter. They ultimately got 2 points out of it anyway. And Monday night anyway, they were at the top of the Metropolitan Division because the Rangers and Devils have each played since. Those two teams are now in front of Carolina. They have 14 points apiece. Carolina's on 13, albeit with at least one, in the case of the Rangers, 2 games in hand. And I've been focusing on the 25th anniversary of the Carolina Hurricanes, as has Scott Burnside, a contributor to Hurricanes.com, but also Burnside on Hockey, and he joins us. And if you're watching on WRAL Sports Plus, there he is, Scott Burnside on Twitter at Overtime Scott B. Thank you very much for your time. I want to spend a little bit on, you wrote about the 25th anniversary of the Hurricanes. And I know it started out weird. They almost killed the mascot. I did an entire podcast on the fact that they almost killed the mascot. But it's been sporadic, but they've packed a lot of good into 25 years, no?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Adam. It's always a pleasure to catch up. And, you know, and when you've been around a long time, you know, I remember going to Greensboro when I was, boy, that's a long time ago. I was at the National Post in Toronto and covered some of the first playoff series against Boston at the end of that second season in Greensboro. And it does seem crazy to think now what the team went through when they first moved to North Carolina from Hartford, right? I mean, they move in a matter of months. I talked to Jim Rutherford for this piece, and he and I have talked about it over the years, but you know, really the unthinkable, moving a professional franchise from an established location as they were in Hartford. And really when they announced they were leaving, they didn't even have a spot to go, right? I mean, they weren't sure where they were headed. And then to decide on North Carolina, but understanding that there wasn't going to be a facility, an NHL-worthy facility in Raleigh for 2 years, and to make the decision to go to Greensboro, I came across, and again, talks about the passage of time, but I came across an interview I did with Peter Karmanos just before the start of the 06 final when I was with ESPN. And during that conversation, we were talking about the first couple of years and really the struggles you know, for everyone involved with the team and the way it had unfolded. And Peter said, well, you know, in hindsight, it probably wasn't a great idea to go to Greensboro, right? It was just hard for everyone. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to Kevin Dineen for this story. And of course, you know, we're, you know, in some ways the league has gone in a giant circle. Arizona Coyotes play their first home games in a much smaller, compact, temporary building at ASU in Tempe. And there was discussion about doing something similar, not on campus, but if I understand it correctly, out by the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
In Raleigh, officials felt the optics would be too ugly. And so they ended up in Greensboro. So it is, it's kind of crazy how it's all unfolded.
If you have ever seen Dorton Arena, which is where they were going, would have played. You couldn't have played. You could not have. I mean, they have like, you know, rodeos in there. Although we have rodeos in these buildings, but, you know, they're rodeos in like glitzy arenas. This is an arena that you basically, oh, yeah, they could have definitely have a rodeo in here. Scott Burnside, Burnside on Hockey. I want to get to that in a second. But what have you seen through nine games of the Hurricanes? What have you seen from them so far this year?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Having spent some time around the team during training camp and talking to, you know, a number of players who's, you know, I think it's fair to say there were 4 or 5 players on this team for whom this season looms large. And I think you have to start right at the very top. Martin Nečas, he and I sat down and chatted, and he was, you know, he's a very candid young man. And a lot of discussion about what his future might hold with the team after last season. Wasn't a great year for him. Has never really found the traction as a high-end draft pick. that he wanted or that the team wanted, I think, which is fair to say. And there was some discussion, you know, do you trade him? Do you, you know, what do you do? But he signed a new deal. He talked about his commitment to be better and to live up to those expectations. And, you know, 13 points through nine games and to go sort of hand in glove with that, in my mind at least, is, you know, the early play of Andrei Svechnikov, 8 goals in 9 games. Those two players have been dynamite together and really have been the engine driving the offense. I mean, there are some players that, you know, it's been a bit of a slow start for Seth Jarvis and Teuvo Teravainen. And, you know, I think we've seen Brent Burns turn a corner over the last couple of games. Mm-hmm. But to me, when you look at this season and the expectations, which are as high as I think they've ever been for this team, that first long road trip, and you see the success that they had on the road. They're 4-1-1 away from PNC. I think that's the important part, right? Things are going to come together. Rod Brind'Amour has a lot of options in terms of this lineup. He's, you know, they move Ethan Bear to Vancouver, which I think that was important because Ethan Bear is a popular player. He's a great kid and has a great story. And I'm sure it wasn't comfortable for anyone involved. You know, the fact that he wasn't able to get in the lineup and the fact that he'd been, you know, sort of lapped on the depth chart, if you will, by Jalen Chatfield and Dylan Coughlin. So I think, you know, this is a pretty good way to start. You mentioned the standings, Adam. I was just looking at points percentage in the Eastern Conference right now. Carolina's second behind red-hot Boston in terms of win percentage, which is a pretty good indicator just a month in. So I would think you'd have to be pretty pleased, even though there are two or three players that really haven't clicked into gear yet offensively.
I mean, you said them. I mean, Jarvis and Teravainen have both been a little sleepy. Sebastian Aho has been a little sporadic, but Natchez has been, and I was glad that you called him candid because I agree. I think Natchez has a very grounded sense of who he is. And he also, I remember after the game in Philadelphia, which they should have just handed him a number two after the game and said, these 2 points belong to you, because he scores the goal to just get him into overtime. And then he makes the play that really made the Burns goal possible. But he said after the game in the interview, he's like, yeah, it's just 8 games. I mean, I got to keep doing this. So he understands where everything sits. All right, to the standings. And by the way, I can't believe Boston is 9-1. I thought that they were going to be like until January before Boston was whole. They're all back, and they seem like the same team to me. All right, so I know your piece on your website, Burnside on Hockey, is about Toronto today. What's going on there?
Well, you know, and having covered the Leafs for a couple of years back in the Pat Quinn days, I love a good Toronto tire fire, right? I mean, there's no place in hockey that, you know, sort of eats its own like the Toronto fans and media do. There's, you know, the pendulum swings so dramatically in that marketplace. It's great, right? I mean, it's a great thing. Now, they're 4-4-2. It's not like they're 0-9,
right?
You know, like they're 4-4-2. But I think the real, you know, it's a legitimate thing to ask about this Toronto team, you know, for a variety of reasons. You know, where are you at? It's not just the records, the fact that they have lost to some of the worst teams in the NHL. They do look like a team that's a bit aimless. You know, the goaltending situation, this is the third year in a row where I think the goaltending plan looks, you know, questionable at best and disastrous at worst. The defense isn't very good, and they just aren't very good right now. Now, the same thing happened last year, right? They got off to a very slow start, same kind of angst, and then turned in 115 points, fourth best in the NHL. So I think the bigger question, though, is there's so much riding on this season for Toronto. Haven't won a playoff round since 2004. Mm-hmm. I think everyone acknowledges that, you know, Sheldon Keefe, the head coach, definitely cannot survive a one and done, and, you know, haven't helped them if they miss the playoffs. I don't think that's going to happen. But if they're one and done again, Sheldon Keefe has to go. I think probably Kyle Dubas, the GM, has to go. Brendan Shanahan, at some point, the, you know, where does the, you know, who pays the piper right at the president level, right? I mean, this is his team. He's built it. He made the decision to move on from Lou Lamoriello. He's, you know, was involved with the firing of Mike Babcock. So there's so much pressure on this team, not just to be good, but to prove something. And they haven't done any of that yet. And then for me, the better part of this is waiting in the wings. You know, one of the best coaches of his generation, a surefire Hall of Famer, two-time Jack Adams winner, Stanley Cup champion, Barry Trotz. A very nice folk a week and a half or so ago. Of course, he was fired by the Islanders right in the offseason. Doesn't have to do anything unless he wants to. But he does. He's not done with the game. Mm-hmm. And he could have coached now.
Sure.
Didn't have a right fit. He spent a lot of time with his family. But he would like, if he's going to coach, he's going to coach a team with a legitimate shot at a deep playoff run. And he's already, you know, we talked about how interesting it would be to coach an original 16. Well, the Leafs are both those things. So I don't think this is imminent necessarily, but I think it's a legitimate thing to ask if you are Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan, do we believe in this plan still? And if the plan is that Sheldon Keefe gets you over the hump and leads you on a big playoff run, first under this, this regime, if you will, of Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and all the rest of them, then that's fine. Then you ride this out. But if you have doubts, then this is the time to act, because you can't, if you don't believe anymore, then you have to do what you can to change that. And I think that's the fascinating part about where these Leafs are at. They're a good team. They're going to be in the playoffs. There are some serious questions that need to be asked about where they're at right now. And they're being asked in Toronto. I can't wait for tonight. I know the Flyers are coming off a back-to-back and, you know, lost in the overtime, I believe, to the Rangers in a great game. But so Carter Hart probably won't play tonight. But, man, if the Flyers manage a win against the Leafs tonight, I don't mind a little chaos.
They're a completely depleted Flyers team. I just saw them on Saturday. I'm like, who are these guys? But they play a certain style, which might really bother the Leafs. Final thing, by the way, if you go to Overtime Scott B on Twitter, you can get all the links to the stories and you can be a subscriber to Scott's website, as I am. All right, so real quick about this, because I don't know that Toronto is going to make the playoffs. It is a very competitive division, and I think that Buffalo might be good. We're going to see Buffalo. Carolina plays Tampa tomorrow, then home against Buffalo on Friday, and then Toronto comes in on Sunday. I'm shaky on Buffalo's goaltending, but that team in front of the goaltender might be good. Rasmus Dahlin looks like he's coming into his own, at least as an offensive player, but they got a ton of firepower up front.
You know, Buffalo is interesting. I'm interested in both New Jersey and Buffalo, right? Because I'm like you at the beginning of the season, you sort of look at the Eastern Conference standings and you think, okay, well, maybe Boston does fall out of the picture. And then which of these emerging teams could jump forward? And the Devils got off to not a great start and lots of pressure on Lindy Ruff there. But I love the job that Tom Fitzgerald has done in building that team. And they are starting to cook. And Jack Hughes is the real deal.
Yep.
And Nico Hischier, people don't get how good he is. I'm with you on Buffalo. I'm a huge Don Granato fan. I love the idea, you know, Kyle Okposo wearing the C, and, you know, it's that marketplace deserves some good hockey news. And Eric Comrie, I don't know about the goaltending. I'm with you. But boy, it would be great if they stayed in the hunt. And they can make things difficult for, whether it's the Leafs, Pittsburgh. You mentioned Boston. I watched that game last night, and Pittsburgh looks like they have things well in hand. End up losing 6-5 and overtime. They're winless in 5 now. I think there will be, there's going to be opportunities for those teams that believe they can make a step forward. I'm curious about Buffalo and New Jersey, and both those markets truly deserve some good news late in the season. It would be nice if both of them were contemplating buying at the trading deadline as opposed to selling off assets, which both teams have done now for years and years.
Shockingly. Imagine the Devils and the Sabres being buyers in February. At Overtime, Scott B on Twitter. Check out the website. I appreciate your time, sir. I'll see you at the rink soon. Hope.
Look forward to it. Call anytime, Adam. Always happy to chat.
You got it, Scott. I appreciate your time.